Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's your boy. It's another corrupt prediction, Tornado Tony Penny. Yeah.
Yes. Well, didn't you say the 10th round?
No. And I did call for a stoppage, and I want to find out if Floyd got hurt in that fight. It hurt his hand. Because if you go back to the 7th or 8th round,
his elbow.
He hurt his elbow?
I think he dislocated it. There was suspicion that he might have.
Oh, no shit. Okay. And the reason I was saying that was around the 7th round, he had Canelo in the corner. And right hand at will. Canelo was back against the ropes. He took the shot flush right in the face. And I turned and I said, I think he's hurt. I think he's done. And I said, he might not make it to the 10th round. And right after that happened, Floyd pulled off the gas. And I was like, oh, shit, did he maybe hurt his hand? Because then he just boxed.
Stepped on his cap.
And,
he admitted after the fight that at one point he stopped throwing his jab.
Okay. I think something happened to either his right hand or elbow, because the right hand was landing at will in the 7th and 8th round. I mean, he was starting to really hit him with some good, hard, clean punches, sharp punches. He had Canelo against the ropes. And I was like, okay, this ain't going to go much. And then, like I said, he stopped. And, I mean, let's face it. We all knew by that point Floyd was way ahead on the cards. I had him winning every round. Thankfully, I mean, not per se that thankfully he won, but thankfully at least the judges gave it to the I thought he's going to be fired immediately. I mean, talk about incompetence.
Well, wait a second. Wait a second.
What?
Breaking news today. I don't know if you heard. CJ Ross took a leave of absence.
Yeah, I just said that. I heard she did something. I saw him go.
He cut out for a second, so I didn't hear that part, but I just read.
Yeah,
well,
hours ago. Taking a leave of absence or suspend or something. She was one of the judges that had Timothy Bradley beat Manny Pacquiao, and that was ridiculous. This fight was ridiculous. But Chavez Whitaker being a draw. Everybody knows Whitaker won 9 of those rounds, standing on his head.
Right. Well, we have a psychic in the house right now.
Yes, and I understand we're going to have CJ Ross on as the guest next week. That's an internet rumor floating around, Rich. Is there any truth to that? You know, I assured my fan club I would confirm it, or I'll get your comments. What do you think?
Well, if we can get her, I know what my first question is going to be. What are you talking about?
Share the weed. Share the weed.
My first question would be, how many fingers am I holding up?
Well, you know, I right hand earlier, and Tom sent me this nice video here of our guest tonight, Brad Kohler. And if you want to find this video on YouTube, I'm just going to play it for the audio. But If you want to find it on YouTube, just search for a huge MMA knockout and click on the one that's put out there by none other than Humpzilla 21. Great YouTube name. But here's the video audio. And this is the one he's most proud of, so it must be UFC 22, because that's the one he's got a link to.
Juliana, he's just unbelievable. Quick double leg by Foley. Now let's see what he's picked up in the world of submission. He's quickly trying to get into a choke submission. Front headlock here again. Wrestler uses front headlock and the knee as a backup. Foley does that great speed. Good lateral movement.
Oh!
So a little bit of a different atmosphere back then. Number one,
yeah.
The guys wearing shoes.
Yeah, well, you remember that was legal. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was legal up until probably, I believe, UFC is probably in the 30s or early 30s. But the rules were, if you wore shoes, you couldn't kick. So it was kind of strange. Remember back then they had guys in gis and guys in wrestling singlets. I remember... guys will almost get choked out with the singlet. I mean, so they finally realize that's maybe not a good idea. But
the gi choke,
yeah.
that's a move. I saw that on a documentary.
Right.
But one of the things that I loved most about this video is there's no Zients in the middle of the mat or anywhere in the cage.
Yes. That was also in the days of the winner of the whole tournament getting $5,000. But I do like, and I want to talk to Brad, I want to really congratulate Brad on the way he set that up, because if you notice, he faked that shot so beautiful. And then all of a sudden he comes, just like Kevin Randleman did when he knocked out Krokop. Just a beautiful setup for that. And that was back in the days when the wrestlers were learning to punch and the... boxers and kickboxers were learning takedown defense and how to handle it, how to survive on the ground. So back in 99, I believe that was.
Well, it's a shame that Tony can't be on the broadcast while we're interviewing him. It's going to start at 9:15 because he also teaches boxing as well, and he's got a heck of a idea. I posted the link on the show page to his innovative design called the Hitter System. And as somebody who's invented my own type of striking bag myself, I have not gotten nearly as far as he has. But, you know, I have the one prototype in operation right now. But I'm not planning to manufacture it anytime soon, and it's nothing as sophisticated as this system. And it's one of those things I really like the idea. I really like the way it looks, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, wondering exactly how it feels to hit it more than anything and how stable it is. I mean, it looks strong, it looks great, but it's one of those things where I feel like I have to experience it before I'll know how good it really is, or how much thought and planning went into it and made it what it is. But he's got it calls it a system because there's not just one bag. And there's not really any bags per se. It's very different shapes, very different than conventional type of striking mechanisms and reactionary things on it. And I think it's in practice. I have to ask him is how exactly do you mount this thing? Things that it's going to mount them on. Well, it's going to add something about exactly what the process is of mounting, even a little video of how you mount this thing and if it's really easier to the wall. But we'll definitely talk to him about it. And
we'll definitely talk to him about it.
Thank you, Blanco. Okay, we are back, and I don't know how much you guys caught. Tom, you with us?
I'm here.
That's another weird thing that keeps happening now is you don't disconnect when I disconnect here, like you have been doing, but I got thrown off the Skype. Now I go back on the Blog Talk Radio show to see if you've called back in, and you're still connected, so it's very weird.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, I was saying before we got cut off so rudely by the shitty connection here, Brad is going to be on later, so we'll try to save all that stuff for him. Tony is only on for another, 18 minutes here, right, Tony? So we got to give you...
So what I need to do is steal Tony's brain, and I'm going to make him the matchmaker for Mayweather's next defense. What the heck do you do to make anything remotely interesting or remotely competitive? What do you do, Tony?
Well, I mean, I didn't think Canelo was ready for that fight, to be totally honest. Not particularly for Mayweather. I did not think Canelo was – I just didn't think he had the experience, and I didn't think he had the speed. Before you got on tonight, Tom, when I was ripping on C.J. Ross, I said her scorecard kind of reminded me of Chavez Whitaker. And
yeah,
that's how bad it was. Now, a fighter that at that age that you would need to fight a guy like Floyd Mayweather at 23, I said all I really could think of at that age would have been ready. And I brought the names of Roberto Duran. And guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, guys like Tommy Hitman Hearn. If I could make a competitive fight, I would have to get Dr. M. Brown's DeLorean, race it back to about 1980-ish, and kidnap one of those guys. Kidnap a young Duran, kidnap a Sugar Ray Leonard, kidnap a Tommy Hearn. That's what we need right now. Because I'm looking at the parent crops of fighters, and who would I want to see? I think he'd beat Sergio Martinez. Martinez is bigger, and I'll give you that. I can see over the last two fights really starting to slow down. I can see his body starting to fail him a little bit at 39 years old. Granted, he's only 3 years older than Mayweather, but he's had injury problems, and he's just looked like he's lost a step or two. I think Mayweather beat Sergio Martinez. Gennady Golovkin would be a very interesting fight. That would be the fight that I would probably be most activate.
What about your boy, Danny Garcia?
I don't think Garcia's ready. I like Danny. I'm going to get to him in a minute. Danny's at 140. And I just think if you go back to law, and Garcia was able to finally unleash his power shots on him. I don't.
By the way, Amir Khan has already called Floyd out. By the way, I don't know if you heard that.
And I just laugh at that because Amir Khan definitely would not lose. If I had to write the prediction for that fight, it would be a short prediction because it would be a 3-round fight. And that's if Mayweather.
Just like Floyd said after the fight, everybody wants to get on the Floyd Money Mayweather train, right?
They're never going to make a lot of money. That fight, 3 rounds, to be honest. Mayweather tattoos him. Gennady Golovkin is a big, strong, physical, mean, nasty guy. That fight would interest me. Now, that fight, now you're asking Mayweather to keep moving up. But it's a double-edged sword. Keep asking him to move up, because right now, at 147 or 154, I'm just not seeing what I need to see. I think Garcia right now is small at 140, and I don't think he's ready for that. But he'd be able to beat Floyd as much as I like David Garcia. I would love to see Adrian Broner take that fight. But here's what I think is going to happen personally. Broner said he'll never take the fight because that's his boy, and he'll fight his boy. Man, you throw that money in the ring, I'd fight my mother for it, to be totally honest. Yeah. And they would kick her ass, too. But Adrian doesn't want to play his boys. He needs to get his ass kicked. So I think what's going to happen is if Broner beats Maidana, coming up in December. Like, boy, Roman's got some weight to lose, too. I mean, he looks pretty pudgy. He gets that weight down, beats Maidana, I think he fights Danny Garcia. I think Garcia knocks Broner out. Because Broner's got a lot of skills, but he's no Floyd Mayweather. He is a Floyd Mayweather, the guy, shoe shiner. I mean, he's the guy, basically wants to carry his coattails. Now we have the most interesting one, and I told you guys that I have an article that I'm going to start working on, because this is the one that intrigues me. Not that the fight would be intriguing, I think the fight would be absolutely awful, is the challenge of Bernard Hopkins. I'm sure you guys have heard this.
Floyd Mayweather versus Bernard Hopkins?
You haven't heard it, I think, Ben.
Oh, no.
Bernard said he would go back down to 160 to fight with Mayweather. Now,
wow.
First of all, yeah, he said that. Now, Bernard says a lot of things. Now, and I'm going to outline all this in my article. That's one thing. Bernard's saying a lot of things. Can he make the weight again? I don't think so. Honestly, the guy's been at 175.
Yeah,
I don't think Bernard would make 160 at all. The man's been at 175, muscular, since 2006. That's almost 8 years. I don't think he'd make it back down to 160 without really killing himself. That's one. Number two.
Better shot is setting up a fight with Andre Ward.
I've heard that one floated around. I've heard that name floated around about Ward, but yes.
Hey, that would make more sense. But I doubt Andre wants to do it. I mean, he hasn't fought in a while. But I don't think he's that desperate for a fight that he's willing to take a loss, a possible loss. I don't think that would be a competitive fight. But
I think the fight would be very competitive. Ward's got a high boxing IQ. He's still in his prime.
He's a good representative by the same manager, too. Al Haymon.
I think it's a tremendous fight. I think Ward can get down to about maybe 163, 164, and maybe catch weight in the middle of that. But back to the Hopkins thing, I see that being possibly the least entertaining fight of all time. You guys, natural counterpunchers, like to box, don't like to get hit, like to outthink their opponents. I could literally see that as being a fight where after 12 rounds, you can count the landed punches on two hands.
How about the other fight last Saturday?
I could see Bernard trying to force some clinches in there and really trying to rough him up a little bit. But overall, with the action, quote-unquote, of the fight, I don't really see much into that. But let me just go back to the fight card from Saturday night. Two fights were good, two fights not good.
I got really big. Okay. Everybody here?
Okay. Yep. As I was saying about the Garcia, fight, his buddy put me on the spot the other day. Says, "What's going to happen tonight?" And I was under two trains of thought there. One was, Matisse is just an absolute beast. You know, he hits like you wouldn't believe. And even a lot of well-respected announcers were saying, Danny has to fight the perfect fight. To beat a guy like Matisse, you either got to be like a tremendous boxer along the lines of a Floyd Mayweather, or you got to be a tremendous puncher. And they're like, Danny, they didn't consider him to be either. A good boxer, a very good boxer, and a very good puncher, but not great in either level, and hittable. So now they're saying, well, that's going to play in Matisse's hands. And for the first two rounds, Matisse was carrying the action. I said, for Garcia to win, and I told this guy Lewis, I said, for your buddy Danny to win, and you know we all love Danny, I said, he's got to stay in the middle of the ring for one. He gets on the ropes, he's in trouble. He's got to keep him boxing in circles. You know, don't sit there and try to go iron for iron with this guy. You sit there, hit him, move. Do not hit him and then try to look and let him get a counter shot at you. And do not go straight back. Anyway, Dana's got to do that for 12 rounds. He's literally got to do that for 36 minutes. And if he doesn't, he could be in a lot of trouble. Matisse won the first two rounds. Danny came back a little bit, won the next two. Matisse won 5-6. So I had him up 4-2 going into the sixth round. Danny had a good sixth round and a very good seventh round. Landed a good left hand, and you can see Matisse's eye literally in the course of 3 minutes swell shut. And then Danny actually started doing a good game plan. Sometimes he would jab at the eye.
How about the way this corner handled that eye? That's what I want to talk about.
Well, they had ice on it for a while, and they had the end swell, but then they were just, like, using their fingers to try to press the swelling away.
The big thumb.
I understand using the end swell to try to push the swelling away from your eye and into more of, like, either your lower cheekbone or off to the side. And by the end, if you go back and you look at the end of the fight when they were about to read the decision, Matisse's eye was more open than it was. So they were able and effective to push some of that swelling away.
Yeah, I noticed at times that it actually did work, but it seemed like it disappeared pretty quickly once he started boxing again as far as games that got out of
it. And once you breathe out of your nose a lot too, that puffs your face back up. That's what they tell you in the ring, don't blow your nose, because that swells your face. Especially when you've gotten hit like that. So, but Danny was then able to hook up the jab, and then he was able to fake the hook and throw a jab. And then she was a knockdown in the 11th round. I had Danny winning that fight 8-4. He lost the point, but then he also, Matisse also lost the point. So I had it 113-111 as one of the judges did. And you know, Danny did a great job.
I didn't score it, but I'll tell you, one of the things that struck me most about this fight is that Garcia looks so much bigger than Matisse. You know, did you notice that? This real broad-shouldered guy, he looked like he was twice the size of him.
He's a growing kid. I know he had a little bit of trouble making weight. That's why they're planning to move him off.
He's a big guy.
But yeah, he looked very physical out there. He's a strong kid.
All right. How about the Molina fight? Did we talk about that already?
Yeah. I talked about it. I said, you know, it was a fight that was hard to score. It wasn't really all that, you know, entertaining, to be totally honest.
I thought she had a chance of losing that fight. That was a tough one to score.
Hey, it was a split decision, you know, because it was a fight that's hard to score. It was like,
I was biased. I've seen him fight so many times. I thought he was way better in past fights that I've seen him in. And, you know, this guy just didn't have the right style for him to really explode with his talent. But he also must have been taking it very conservatively, I think, because, whether he had an injury or some issue that he didn't tell us about, I don't know what the story was. But Ishe Smith is actually not that far off from Floyd Mayweather's style. It's just a different execution, different level of skill with his punches, but defensively does a lot of the shoulder roll type stuff, and I don't see why that would have given the Carlos Molina I've seen in person in the live matches any trouble. But for some reason Saturday night, it gave him a lot of trouble, and he looked sloppy out there. But you got to give him the fact that he definitely scored the harder punches in that fight, because Ishii is kind of a light puncher. I sort of enjoyed that fight. I just kind of was baffled. Where was the Carlos Molina I know? And I've been waiting for to get this opportunity to be on Showtime on a Mayweather card. You know, I figured that would bring the best out of him, but it kind of brought the more conservative side of him out. Neither guy really beat the other guy up that much at all. So I guess that leaves us with the Cano fight.
Well, I mean, the first fight of the night, full fight, entertaining. I thought he earned the win. He got the win. Both guys kept stunned. It was a good back and forth action fight. You know, wasn't a whole lot of style, but it was entertaining. That's all you can really ask for.
Another split decision too. I don't know how that's possible, but you got guys that scored at 98-92, Cano, 97-93, Cano, and then
96-94, Theophane. Yeah, I don't know how it was possible to have the Mayweather play majority of the decision. Oh,
right.
CJ Ross was doing that, never mind. Did you see what she tweeted about his ass in the fight?
No.
He said something like making a joke of it. She was. Oh, that kid was almost young with a 3-4-year son. But I'm against, beating children or something. That's why I scored in school to draw.
It's not something to make fun of. But I was kind of miffed about that decision. But you know how Teddy Atlas goes off about, a bad decision that gives the wrong fighter the win. Well, I think he actually was more pissed about this one.
Yeah, it should be.
In his interview that I saw, he was livid about C.J. Ross scoring that a draw.
Gentlemen, I'm going to wig out on you. I'm going to wig that suit and join the rest of my crew.
All righty.
All right. Well, have a great rest of the show. Enjoy your interview.
All right, bud.
Bitches, and I will talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right.
Have fun. Go Eagles. I don't even think I set my fantasy lineup if I have anybody in this game right now, but hopefully I have a minute to do that. But anyway, Tom, we are the Tom and Rich show now.
Well, that'll work. Yeah. I'm sure we can keep it going. Yeah, I'm looking forward to our guest.
We do have big boxing story, of course. Tony could stay on for, but Ken Norton Sr. died today.
Oh, yeah.
Last night, Wednesday, in Arizona. Suffered a stroke last year, according to his friend and manager, Patrick Tenor. He was 70 years old, and he also had a congestive heart failure. So obviously the guy was in a lot of suffering, so in some ways, this is sort of a blessing, I would suppose. And speaking of football, Ken Norton Jr. is a big-time football coach right now. And was a great football player that I remember watching during his career.
You know,
but,
Kenny,
also,
he was in a terrible car accident out in L.A. Years ago. I think back in the 80s, early 90s, or something like that. I'm not sure the exact time, but they had to use the jaws of life to get him out of the car. And I don't think he ever really completely got back on track and recovered from that. Because what the email you sent me today? Boy, Ken looked a little on the old side at that point. I believe it was in there. I see so many sources, but yeah, he really looked like he was not doing too good. And in fact, even going back to '97, there was a boxing award ceremony on ESPN Classic, and he looked like then he was starting to get a little worse for the wear. Awful story. He sure did bring some excitement. I remember he was. Fought on the undercard of the Shivalo-Ali rematch back in 72, and he won a decision. I can't remember who he fought then, but then it was March of 73 when he shocked the world and out-jabbed Muhammad.
Broke his jaw.
A lot,
I don't know how many people did that.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember watching it, and I just, you know, I it was just hard to believe that this was happening. You know, I'm thinking, my God, here this guy with this so unconventional style, like a peg leg. You know, his right leg was so immobile. I mean, that was just his style. But he got a lot of power out of that right hand, and he could make that jab work. And the rematch was fairly close. And then, but Ali got the decision. And then in 74, his title shot against Foreman didn't go too well. I think it was, you know, the old cliche, styles make fights. And Norton always had trouble with big punchers. That was the one Achilles heel. But yet he seemed to have Ali's number. Go figure. You know, I wish
we had seen what Ken Norton Jr. would have been capable of as a boxer, because I didn't really see much of the father fight, but I watched a lot of son play football. And, you know, like we're always saying about boxing is the guys that would be the best heavyweights right now are in other sports.
Yeah, exactly. But back then, remember, it was a whole different game back then. And he was... He had the title briefly, and then he lost a decision. Yeah, I think he got the title on by default, and then he lost a close decision to Larry Holmes, and that was still in the days when it went 15. And then when he was trying to get back on track, Ernie Shavers blew him away in about a minute. That was a very brutal fight, and just couldn't get it going.
Even though he wasn't undefeated, he did one thing that Rocky Marciano never did as a heavyweight. He fought his 50th fight before he retired. He ended up at 42-7-1, 33 knockouts, and later went on to an acting career. I don't know if I've seen any of his movies.
He was even doing some acting, I think, in the 70s. I think that's when Mandingo came out. So he was doing some acting back then, And then his last fight, I believe he retired after the Jerry Cooney knockout. But he was fairly successful. I know he had a most interesting fight with Scott Ledoux back in 79, a fight that he was winning and just way ahead. Then Ledoux made a miraculous comeback, and there was all kinds of controversy in that one. It's on YouTube if you ever want to take a look at it. But so that was ruled a draw. And then he fought Tex Cobb, who at the time was an upcomer, and he decisioned him. That was in 1980, if memory serves me correct. So kept it going for quite a while, and just an exciting guy.
I think we might have a new Rain Man of boxing.
Oh, okay. Well,
geez, you got a memory for this guy.
Tony's the sharp guy now. You know, I mean, this old brain's not, the old computer's got a little creaks in it now, you know, but from back then, I mean, I hate to sound like an old man, but it was such a different era then. There was so much excitement in boxing back then. Not that there's not now. I don't need to say there's not, but it's just.
In the 80s, there was a little bit left, you know, when Mike Tyson left the heavyweight division. It really fell apart until the welterweight, Floyd Mayweather, really got it going again in America. Now we're back into the heyday of the sport. But for a while there in the 90s, it really wasn't that great. You know, there really wasn't a lot going on.
Well, you got to remember that cliche, Rich. As the heavyweights go, so goes boxing. And back then, the heavyweight division, especially in the 70s, I mean, you had contenders. We had the trilogy there with Foreman, Frazier, and Ali, and talk about styles making fights. But then there was that tier right beneath them of the Kenny Nortons, Jerry Corey, George Travallo, Jimmy Ellis, Ernie Shavers, Ron Lyle. I mean, all these guys could be dead, and Jimmy Young kind of came along. I mean, all these guys were capable on any given night of pulling it off. So there was so much excitement there that by the time we started moving down in weight, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on then, too, back with Carlos Monzon, and then Hagler was making his move back then, and there was just so much excitement even in the lower weight divisions, welterweight. Then, of course, don't forget Roberto Duran. That was a lot. Roberto really didn't get a lot of exposure till the late 70s.
Right.
I mean, there were a few of his fights on. I remember Ray Lamkin, after he knocked him out and said, well, if I'd have trained hard, he'd be going to the morgue instead of the hospital. And I wanted, did they really translate that correct? Because they were saying it in Spanish, and he needed the interpreter there. And, you know, that's back when they had the fights on Sunday afternoon there on Wide World of Sports, Saturday afternoon Wide World of Sports. And I'm kind of just, geez, did he really say that? My God, wow, this guy's interesting. And then he comes along and jumped right over junior welterweight, went to welterweight, and went at it with Sugar Ray Leonard. And the rest is history.
Well, getting back to MMA, we have the next story about a guy who is an MMA fighter who wants to box. Quentin Rampage Jackson, this is one of those stories I left off of last week's roster because I had it open in another window and not in my notes. But Quentin Rampage Jackson, back in the news again. And, of course, it's all about his beef with Dana White. And this is heating up quite a bit because... you know, this is almost threatening the way he's come out with these statements here on this. Basically, he's telling Dana White to keep his name out of your mouth, basically, is what he said. He says, it's best if anybody asks you a question about me, just say no comment. And, of course, at the bottom of this story, somebody wrote in the comments, well, you know, same advice goes for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody asks you about Dana White, you should say no comment. But that's very interesting that he would get that upset to say something like that.
Well, for some reason, I don't think it's in Dana's DNA to pay attention to commands like that. So this will be interesting. We'll see where it goes, but...
And, unfortunately, we got another MMA story. This is kind of a borderline MMA story, because this is a guy, I think, just had a couple fights here. Yeah, he won two professional matches in 2010.
Oh, that
this
idiot.
Is a
go ahead and...
Police blotter story here. Former professional MMA fighter is accused of beating his girlfriend and then high-fiving his friends after knocking her to the ground. Talk about a scumbag here. But this is charges filed Friday. It doesn't say in this clip that I've got about where it was. I guess I left that out. But a guy named Samuel Guinn, G-U-Y-N-N, 33 years old. I think you should know better at that age. He had a little argument on September 7th with his girlfriend at her Cottonwood Heights home, or whatever state that's in. I don't know. But anyway, the basic principle of the story here. The woman told police that Guinn smashed her several times in her apartment and then began punching her in the head. Officers at the apartment found holes in the walls, broken pictures, a broken glass coffee table, and broken mirrored closet doors, all worth more than $1,500. The woman went to her next-door neighbor's home until she saw Guinn taking items from her apartment, police wrote. When she approached him in the parking lot to ask for her house key, Guinn allegedly punched her in the side of the head, knocking her to the ground and causing her to become dizzy and sick to her stomach. The neighbor told police Guinn and his friends then began laughing and giving each other high fives like it was funny, investigators wrote. The men fled when police arrived, according to documents. So they're bold enough to go high five after they just witnessed the mountains, but they don't have the guts to stick around when the police show up to give a statement. You know, what kind of men are these? But obviously
well,
this guy was...
Yeah, and you say the guy's record was he had two fights. Did he win those fights?
Two wins, yeah. Won two professional matches in 2010. It doesn't say if he lost any before that or won any before that or any other details. But anyway, the guy's charged with second-degree felony aggravated assault, resulting in serious bodily injury and third-degree felony criminal mischief. And get this, you know, big surprise, he's already on trial or awaiting trial on accusations that he punched a man at a New Year's Eve party this year in Salt Lake City. And this is a real unfortunate story. This is almost worse than the girl, you know. If it wasn't a girl, it probably, you know, You know, if it wasn't a girl, this would be worse. But this story is crazy. Just walks up to this guy at a party, and not only does he punch him, but he crushed the victim's cheekbone and eye socket into 35 separate bone fragments. You imagine that? The victim in this case has said that he had never spoken to this guy before and was punched without warning or provocation. He posted bail about 2 weeks before the alleged attack in Cottonwood Heights. Just disgusting.
Wow. Well,
we should have a special segment of our show for people like this. We've got to come up with a name for these scumbags, people who are using their fighting skills for an improper purpose here. I guess we could call it the police. That
just goes beyond words. I mean, in the traditional martial arts, you know, there's always that chivalry and, you know, all the code. And you even see that. It's not spoken as much in boxing or MMA, but it's just implied.
Right.
It's just implied that this is...
Look at the Karate Kid. I mean, that's all you need to watch. Learn the respect for the craft. Like I was saying...
Yeah, from my background in traditional martial arts, there it's just explicit. I mean, it's drilled into you. And in the MMA and boxing world, it's not talked about so much. But you just know that this is not the way to go. This is just not the thing to do, you know, on any level. First off, I think Boss Rudin made the statement. He says, well, I could go into a bar and beat up 50 guys. So what?
Right.
Well, I can't imagine, you know, when you're training.
You got a how-to video on how to bar fight.
Well, that's true. That's true. In fact, I have that. But I mean, he was making the point: don't do this. You know, don't do this. Of course, you know, who knows? I've heard some stories about him. I digress. Don't get me off on that tangent. But you know, it's just.
I'll tell you, I met Boss in person, and it was kind of one of the funniest fan and fighter moments I've ever seen because. He's very approachable, number one. And when I first went up to shake his hand and say hello, there was all kinds of people trying to get his autograph. And somebody yelled out, I'll buy you a drink after the show. And he goes, I don't drink, but thanks anyway. So
I could imagine there are some interesting stories. Well, I heard he was a bouncer at a place in his Amsterdam, right? Holland, isn't he from Holland?
It makes sense to me. Should be.
Yeah, and I heard he was a bouncer, and there I guess some guy was really out of line. So after Boss knocked him out, this is pretty brutal. But supposedly after Boss knocked him out, he heel hooked him with both legs. Now, you can imagine the heel hook, if you've ever had one on you. The horrible thing about heel hooks is you just don't realize how much damage it's doing until the damage is done. I mean, if it's an ankle lock or a knee bar, then that's pain. But the heel hook just doesn't hurt that much until all of a sudden, pop, and there goes the tendon. And supposedly, Boss did this to both legs before he took off. Oh, I got to remember him, huh?
Yeah.
Now, again, I wasn't.
Coincidentally enough, when I used to live in Massachusetts and go to the fight cards there, I noticed that the heel hook was used there more than any other region I've ever seen it used in. So for some reason, it's a big staple in I think probably all of New England by now, but at that point it was all over Massachusetts. Every guy was using it. And I can remember actually one of the guys that made it to the UFC was in one of the big heavyweight fights I was watching. I can't think of the guy's name right now, but we had the other guy on the show as a guest. We might have had even both of them, but anyway, fight happened, and one of the heavyweights, which you really never see heavyweights going for heel hooks in UFC fights these days, but this fight got to the point where one guy was pretty much all slugging, and the other guy tried to get a heel hook and thought he had it and went for it, and it ended up costing him the fight. But I digress. Let's get back to current events here. Next story is another layover from last week. I forgot to mention, but it's still relevant this week, of course. The most anyone has ever been paid in the UFC, according to a powwow between Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White. Believe it or not, $5 million. And he doesn't really explain who it was or when it was, but he does mention right after he puts the $5 million figure out there, quote, "We didn't start making money until 2007. That was 6 years ago. So boxing's been around for 100 years. They've been doing big events since way back then. Pretty amazing what we have done in short amount of time. I don't think a lot of people look at that way and break it down for what it really is." So I don't know what that means as far as when it happened. But maybe he's trying to say it was before 2007, which makes sense because I know that as far as I know, the most highest paid guy in recent history was well, I guess two guys, Brock Lesnar and Anderson Silva, I think, just got paid $600,000 for his loss to Weidman, right?
Okay, and where was Chuck Liddell at in the whole thing? Or was he still
Chuck
a little
Liddell,
before?
I know for a fact he made more in sponsorship money than he ever made for a fight.
Yeah.
He didn't come along where, there were six-figure paydays, I don't think, at that point. It was still kind of getting into that point where they started using that term meteoric rise for MMA in the UFC.
Yeah.
He was just before that. He got out of the game or was at the last of his career, and he didn't have a title, and he wasn't I don't think he was one of those guys that was making six figures at that point. But I'm sure he made that with his endorsements because he was the first guy to get paid $1 million by Zions. But this doesn't say that this was anything to do with sponsorships. This is $5 million for one fight. So that leads me to believe it's either a guy like George St. Pierre, who I've never really seen any fights of his where they've disclosed his salary at all recently. If it's recently, it would have to be him. Or somebody that we would never even guess from before the modern era, I guess you could call it. But I guess it's going to be a mystery until they decide to let it fly and tell the truth there. Anyway, so got a big interview coming up in a few minutes, but got a few more little stories here. Elvis is in the news. Elvis Mutipsic, probably butchering that. This is a weird story. Even the president of this World Series of Fighting said he's never seen this before. And this guy's a fighter himself, Ray Sifo. What happened to this guy? He's backstage at the fight, made weight fine, no other issues, and had his bout scrapped just before it started Saturday by the New Jersey State Athletic Commission because an inspector reportedly allegedly saw him take a pill from a bottle that was previously undisclosed to the commission. And this is where it starts to get weird. This guy says he didn't do it. He didn't take any pill. He said, "You can test me all day and night. I'm not going to have anything in my system." He's worked his ass off. He's gone through his whole training camp, and they don't let him fight because supposedly they saw him take a pill. Now, he argues that my whole camp was in there dressed the same. This lady probably confused him for somebody else. Maybe one of his training people taking this pill. He says, "I'll take a blood test. I'll give you a sample if they need it. I got nothing in my system. I'm completely clean." He also even got a second blood test that night to prove he didn't take any type of pre-fight substance. And I didn't read the article, but he released his test results, so they obviously must have been clean. Here's what the New Jersey State Athletic Commission said. quote, there were some prescriptions that weren't given to our doctors during the physicals and that weren't approved by us. So we didn't know what they were and what they do, and we canceled the fight, unquote. Mutapik was supposed to fight Jesse Taylor in the semifinals of the World Series of Fighting middleweight tournament in this fight, and David Branch won a decision over Danilo Villafort in the other semifinal. But as I said, Ray Sifo said he's never seen this before. He said he's been in martial arts for 25 years, and Elvis had been training for this fight for 10 weeks. And he said, but the commission has made its own decision, and we have to live with it. He also said it's sad to see this happen. But this is one of those situations where, you know, a boxing commission, unlike any other sport where you have the commission and the actual owners and the league, you know, this is a sport with a commission and a league. A very, very different scenario from most sports. So in some ways it's bad, but in other ways, when mistakes like this happen, they have their own ways of dealing with it. And one of the ways they dealt with it was they paid him, paid the guy for the fight, even though he didn't fight. So not a bad way to make a buck.
Well, there you go. But I'm sure he still wanted to fight.
Right. I'm sure he wanted the win on his record that he, you know, felt confident he would be able to get. But, you know, at least they try to do something for him, take care of him.
Mm-hmm.
Another story about former big-time boxer Rafael Djokovic. He signed a multi-fight MMA deal with KSW. This is a Polish guy. He signed a multi-fight contract with the KSW Federation to compete in mixed martial arts. He's born in Minsk. And he originally began his fight career as a kickboxer, but later switched over to professional boxing. And beginning with his first fight in February 2001, Djokovic amassed a record of 42-11-2 in the welterweight boxing division. 21 of his wins have come by way of knockout. In 2010, Djokovic contended for the IBF world title and is one of the few Polish guys to ever do so. Should be a force to be dealing with. And asked, why did you decide to switch to MMA? He says, I won't lie. I won't fool anyone that fans need me or want to see me. I had some successes in boxing, but here it's all about money. I want to earn some and save for my future. I made a mistake in boxing. I thought I would earn more. I didn't. I don't. And here I have a chance to make more. I just need to go out, have exciting fights, and don't get taken down or submitted. For some 10 zloty, whatever the heck that amounts to, is much. For some, it's 100 zloty, and for others, 100,000 zloty is not enough. I know what I'm worth. I struck a deal with KSW that suits me, and when it suits me, everything is great. He was also asked at what weight will he compete, and where do you want to train? He says, kickboxing is my passion. My boxing is not that bad either. I just need people to practice the ground skills with me. I trained in Nastula, where Lukasz Jurkowski, Piotr Struss, and Andrzej Pniewski helped me out. Those was a tough group of names to get through. We help each other. I give them pieces of advice to improve their striking. They help me learn the grappling. I would like to compete at 70 kilograms. And I don't have my metric converter in front of me, so.
Well, that's so that would be about closer to welterweight, I believe. No, it would be lightweight. Yeah, 71-40. He'd be fighting 155.
Okay, so his debut is expected to take place in 2014, but this is one of the first cases I've heard of where a boxer is going over to MMA and his reason is money. So I thought that was a good reason to put this in this week's notes.
Oh, yeah, and just for trivia here, the Polish zloty is zloty. Well, I didn't say that 10 times. Which is about 32 cents to the U.S. dollar. Or it's worth 32 cents. So I guess it's approximately 3-1.
So three zlotys, I got a new word now. Three zlotys would be $1.
All right.
Okay.
There is. We have our psychic on board for information
That's it.
Like that.
I love
I
that
mentioned
word.
To Tony earlier. I mentioned to Tony earlier, I didn't have it right in front of me, so I didn't confirm it, but getting back to the Floyd Mayweather fight, he did dislocate his left elbow, according to his own report, in the middle of that fight, and apparently it happened somewhere around the fifth or sixth round. Just thought I'd reiterate that. Let's see. And this is a tragic story. Turns out somebody got shot after this fight. It had to be this fight because the shooting happened 2 a.m. Sunday morning. And it doesn't mention which fight it was, but it says it's happened in Northwest Dallas on Sunday. And it says after a group of people watched a televised boxing match at a home in the 3100 block of Talisman Drive near Webb Chapel Road. After the match, they went out to the front yard where a few of them got into an argument about the match. Two people struck a man in the head and cut him with a beer bottle, according to a police report. They then fled in a white pickup truck. Police responded to a shooting call at the home around 2:23 a.m. and found Eliseo Hernandez Lopez, 46 years old, of Irving in the street. Lopez was taken to Dallas Medical Center in Farmers Branch where he was pronounced dead. And police say Lopez was trying to break up a fight when he was fatally shot. Go figure. They're obviously interviewing witnesses and fortunately have not identified suspects or made any arrests as of this report. But, geez, you know, it sucks to hear that something like that happened. It gives people more fodder to go out there and say, you know, these sports are too violent and they incite violence. So it's
unfortunate. Yeah, and you kind of get the feeling there may have been a bit of alcohol at work in that one. But regardless, that's
somebody got caught with a beer bottle. So,
well, God, yeah. Oh, wow. An amazing story.
And getting back to Mayweather, one other Mayweather story. This is a big one. This is the mother of all Mayweather stories. If you might remember years ago, before the UFC really got as powerful as it was today, number one, there was a sort of an MMA versus boxing debate going on in the media. That's actually what brought Tony onto our broadcast here, is we did our own series on our old platform, and we did episodes of boxing experts versus MMA experts hashing out different issues that we discuss in every episode, kind of like we did a little while ago with the TNT segments with you and Tony. But this time, I just moderated the boxing versus MMA discussion. And we had talked about it at the time because Floyd Mayweather became a big enemy of MMA at this time because he was talking a lot of smack about it. And talking about how boxing will always be superior, which actually at the time it was kind of undisputed that it was still superior. Now it's, I think, a little bit closer between the two of them. I still think boxing generates more revenue, has a lot more worldwide fans, and is still way more established in every town and city in America and every other country around the world that allows it, I guess. But Mayweather's saying he wants to get into mixed martial arts now, which is a big surprise.
I remember back then that Sean Short got involved in this somehow, and I guess Mayweather was implied. Now you say he was saying boxing was better. He meant like more popular or a more effective style of fighting. Or what do you mean by that? Do you know offhand?
Well, I think it was the argument boxers were better athletes was the gist of his argument. Now think about it.
I remember Sean Short actually responded to that, and he said, well, let's go. He says, let's get at it. He says, well, of course. He says, there's no way in the world I could match his hand speed. But at some point, we're going to tie up. And if Sean Short, Sean Short would get a hold of Mayweather and slam him on his back, now we have a whole new game. But I guess Floyd's out for that would be, well, why should I fight for a little money if I can make a lot more in boxing? And so it's one of those you can't prove a negative, you know. So, but yeah, that's interesting. If things have switched around like this, yeah.
Yeah. Now this isn't even the most surprising aspect of the story. This is a bigger nugget here because it's very surprising. He said, "I want to promote MMA fighters also. We are looking to promote MMA fighters, so it's the first time you're hearing it. Al Haymon is looking to manage MMA fighters," he says. And even though Al Haymon hasn't come on record and said it, he says, "But I want Al to manage MMA fighters. I think I can take it to the next level." The next level. And you know, obviously he has a ton of, which is exactly what enabled the Fertittas to bring MMA into the mainstream. They threw $40 million down the toilet. So I think that's chump change to Mayweather if he really wants to get an organization started. Or actually, he says he's pretty friendly with the UFC. And he says, "I don't mind doing business with Dana White. Dana White's a cool guy." Got to disagree with him there. "I've known Dana before he got involved with the MMA." So maybe he was Floyd's boxer size instructor.
Well, it's kind of nice to see this, though, because I remember back in the mid-90s. Now, I don't know if you were following the sport much back then, but that was, for me, the pre-internet days, and all the news I could get was the monthly martial arts magazines. And I remember that there was an article in Ring Magazine knocking the UFC. They called it the Ultimate Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And there was a fellow by the name of Keith Hackney. I don't know, does that name ring a bell to you, Keith Hackney? Or were you following those early ones?
Not a...
Okay, well, Keith Hackney goes back to UFC 3, UFC 4, and then he was in Ultimate 95. Okay, and he had a fun style. He was a traditional Kempo, but he added some boxing, and he was starting to learn the ground. He was one of the pioneers, but he had a heating and air conditioning business. And I remember that article in Ring Magazine made such a joke out of that. Well, here's a guy that puts in furnaces during the day. You know, and I was thinking to myself, a lot of boxers have to have jobs until they get to the top, until they really start making a full-time living. There's a lot of boxers that don't have the luxury of training full-time. And you know that. It's still that way today.
Right.
I mean, what's the old cliche? Something exactly. Like in most businesses, 80% of the money, people make 20% of the money, or 20% make 80%. And in some things, it's even more. And I think boxing, it may be even more reverse than that. And I just, at the time, was just kind of wondering, where does this hostility come from the boxing world? Did they feel that threatened? Because you didn't see it coming from the MMA crowd to boxing. I mean, maybe there was, you know, a little bit of that, but I mean, boxing's an important part of this. Well, anyway.
Right. Well, I think the time when you'll really see that MMA and boxing are on equal footing is when you see a Bo Jackson type, where, you know, he's somebody comes along, who, male or female, who decides to do both sports at the same time. Obviously, can't do it in the UFC, but maybe in Bellator. Maybe you see somebody like the next Quentin Rampage Jackson, who decides a little younger maybe that he wants to do both sports and ends up doing phenomenal at both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
If that ever happened, I think you get a sense that it's finally on equal footing, but I think that's a long way off. But either way, I think this is a big thing for Floyd Mayweather to decide he's going to do both. And I honestly don't think his promotional outfit is that solid. I think if he had aligned with 50 Cent, he might have been better off. But you know, they let some petty issues get in the way of their agreement, and he's kind of been doing it slowly, which is kind of probably how you have to do it when you first get into doing it. But
yeah.
Floyd knows what he's doing, and he's got the right people surrounding him, and God knows he's got the money, number one, and We'll see. I definitely believe that he can make some major changes to the sport that would help it out. I don't know exactly how he will do that, but I'm just confident in his obviously his ability to make money is huge. His ability to generate publicity is huge. And, you know, the fact that he knows what it takes to be a fighter, unlike Dana White,
mm-hmm.
both for teeth. You know, none of those guys have anything but training under their belts. I don't think I've ever even heard a story of them having a street fight with somebody, even as a kid. Never heard anything about any of these guys ever being in a real fight. So the fact that you'd have Floyd Mayweather involved in MMA, granted he hasn't had an MMA fight, but he's had a boxing match, which is more than you can say about Dana White.
Yeah.
I think that's great. That's great for the sport, and it did volumes of great things for boxing. When guys like Golden Boy got involved, obviously it didn't help him out that much, Golden Boy, but it helped the fighters. And now you got Mike Tyson, is the latest guy to get in as a former fighter, much loved fighter and much followed fighter. And you see how much publicity and energy he's generated already. And he's got like a whole hype machine behind him now. But he's probably more famous now than he ever was. So just kind of goes to show you how that works. But I'm thrilled. I'm definitely thrilled. I can't wait to see what moves he makes to really make this a serious deal and basically make it official. But we'll see. I really think it's going to take him a lot of time. He can just kind of make this remark off the cuff. But he'll probably end up thinking this through before he does anything major. And maybe we'll see him get involved in it next year. He's already said he's counting down the months to his last fight. He's got 24 months left. And then he's out of the game. And he can focus on whatever he wants to do business-wise. So more power to him. Best of luck, Floyd. I hope you kick the Fertittas out of the business.
Well,
buy them out.
You've got to give him all the credit in the world for seeing the corruption with the promoters and the Don Kings and the Bob Arums, and finally he just had his fill of it and said, I'm going to do my own thing and be my own self promoter, which is almost unheard of. I mean, you think that most of the time fighters would say, hey, I've just got to concentrate on the fighting. I let my managers and I let them do all that stuff and my agents. And Floyd's an amazing human being to be able to focus on everything that he can. He seems to thrive on chaos from the little that I've seen of his atmosphere. I'm sure you've seen enough of those countdowns.
Well, I've been to a couple of his open workouts there out in Vegas. I was lucky enough to be right on the ring apron next to Leonard Ellerbe during one of his little sparring sessions there. And I got the impression that, it kind of made me think or gave me an impression of why he had so many issues with his father.
Mm-hmm.
Back then was because it seemed to me like he really liked to be in charge of everything and to set the pace, at least in his workouts. And I think what got him at odds with his father was that his father liked to kind of tell him what to do and say, maybe you should go do this now instead of doing sit-ups, And he just said one wrong thing one day, and Floyd flipped out on him because he's so used to people just letting him go at his own pace. They really don't even talk to him that much unless he talks to them. When he's doing his workouts, even his uncle, Roger Mayweather, when he's holding the mitts, they do that almost completely without a word, without a single word to each other. So it's kind of amazing to see, but, you get the impression watching that a couple times and seeing how Floyd operates that's the way he likes it. He doesn't like anybody telling him anything. You don't train him. He trains himself. And maybe that's what makes him so good. You know, but one of the things that I think has improved his style tenfold over his last few fights is the fact that he does have his father in his camp now, and he is listening to him, and he's given him a world of credit. I mean, I've never seen him give his father that much credit. He's, my dad's got the game. He knows what's going on. And that's very unlike Floyd that I've seen in recent
years.
Because
I remember it was so bad that at one point, do you remember, let's go back to the De La Hoya fight, when there was even a horrifying rumor about Floyd Sr. being in the corner of Oscar during the fight. My God. I mean, this is a serious business here, and it's a sport. No one wants to see anyone seriously injured, but still, you're in there to go to war and have your own flesh and blood on the. I mean, I wouldn't even entertain that thought. I'd be incapable of that. Yeah, that shows how bad it was that would even be mentioned. Well, I do believe Oscar trained some with Floyd Sr., didn't he?
Yeah, well, before. I think before there was any idea that there was going to be a fight between Oscar and his son or anything.
Yeah, but I had even heard that there was some talk of him being in the corner. I'm thinking, well, you know, as long as I've been around, I like to think I've seen about everything, but I hope I just, that would just be horrible. That would just be absolutely, I don't know. I mean, that's the way I see it anyways. Maybe they just see it as all business, but, oh, boy.
Well, let's connect with Brad Kohler. Oh, I just closed the wrong window. Just give me a minute. I got to connect for them. Check the number in again here. Brad, like I said, he is a two-fight UFC veteran. I'm guessing that his first fight was not as impressive as his this UFC 22. Appearance.
Yeah, he was armbarred in UFC Japan by Trey Kelligman.
Okay. So he conveniently leaves that out of his bio. He's not letting me add a number. Come on. Oh, that's why. I put the number in the name box. All right, we're going to get this figured out. But Brad, like I said earlier in the show, has a unique boxing and actually MMA in general, any kind of striking setup with the bags. And he calls it the hitter system. And he's looking for $75,000 to get the I guess you'd call it manufacturing and distribution off the ground. And he's got a Kickstarter campaign. We've posted it on my Facebook page at Facebook.com/Fight News Unlimited. And he's also got a Kickstarter page on that. It's kind of a long address, but it's on our Blog Talk Radio show page if you want to check that out.
Hello.
Brad, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and I'm also on the line with my co-host here, Psychic Tom Padgett.
Good evening, Brad.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. How you doing, guys?
Great.
I didn't realize, is it 9:15 already?
It is 9:15. Eastern Standard Time. We're ready to go.
Eastern? Oh, you got Eastern, huh?
Yeah.
Not minutes over time.
We crossed some time zones, huh?
That's all right, man. So what's going on?
Not much. We've been talking a little bit about you before we got you on. Tom was able to send me over your big knockout from UFC 22.
Oh,
And we actually started off the show with that audio earlier.
Yeah, Brad, I've been waiting a long time to congratulate you on that. And I noticed in that fight that
you
set that right hand up so perfect, because I know you had a strong grappling background, and I figured you'd eventually want to take it to the ground. But, you know, back in 1999, we were still starting that hybrid stuff where the grapplers were learning how to punch more and working on the stand-up game, and the stand-up guys working on the takedown defense and the grappling. And you put it together so good, because I think you had that rhythm like, okay, I'm going to shoot. And it looked like you were really coming in for that shot for that split second. And I think it worked. It worked perfect. And then that right hand from hell. And I'll tell you what, Steve Judson was no cheap date. I mean, I understand he had a lot of success in some of the other shows before he got to the UFC. So congratulations to you on that one.
Well, thanks. It was it was a nice moment. It was that was a short notice fight for me and him, and we both went in there, and although we both were in shape, and it was just last minute opponent thing, so we really didn't train for it, but we were ready for it, kind of thing, So it was a good night.
Now, Brad, can you tell us what got you into fighting in the first place?
Well, I used to train with Mark Coleman over at Ohio State, and back in 91, 96, him and I were training quite a bit, and we were out one night, and some guy kind of messed with me a little bit, and I really didn't want to fight, but the guy kept pushing and ended up getting into a fight, and then Coleman and I, at that point, decided that, hey, we might want to take this into the cage. And he was all excited, and he pursued it and started to, get coached by some guy. His name was Hamilton out of Arizona at the time. And
Richard Hamilton,
yeah. Yep, and are we live?
Yes, we are. And you can swear.
Okay, yeah. I'm actually at my juice bar. No, I'm not going to swear. I'm actually at my juice bar making up a blender right now. I'm just going to take a second. You're going to hear a blender in the background. I'm making some protein coffee. But anyway.
value. We had sound effects.
But here we go. So I got into it. And believe it or not, I never choked a guy out before in my life and ended up choking him out. And with a front guillotine choke, and he just dropped. And Coleman was so excited. He's like, "Oh, I got to get in this UFC." If you ever talk to Mark Coleman, he's like, "Man, I got he's just a cool cat to talk to." So we've been friends for a long time.
Mark Coleman? It didn't say Mark Coleman?
Yeah, Mark Vandermeer Coleman. Yeah.
We've
been very tight for a long time.
I think we interviewed him at least a year ago, maybe 2 years ago now. He's a great interview.
Really?
One of our best.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He's awesome, man. But we're both Ohio State wrestling champions. There you go, guys. And no problem. Thank you. And we're both Ohio State wrestling champions the same year, actually. And we just kind of went separate ways. Hooked up again back at Ohio State, and he was coaching there. I was coming in to train, and it was great. He was a great training partner. And then, then the fighting came along, and that's when my fighting career took off. And everything was really good up until, 2003 when I really started getting sick and really couldn't explain what was going on and ended up having cancer and, had to make a little detour. But, hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, okay.
Interestingly enough, I've done some writing about a product called 714X. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but it's an alternative treatment for cancer that has no side effects whatsoever. So if you ever run into any athletic types that don't trust doctors, tell them about this stuff because it's available in Mexico and Canada. It's not restricted in the United States. You can get it delivered right to your door, and you inject it yourself. It has absolutely no side effects. And my cousin was 7 or 8 years old. She was given 3 weeks to live. She took this stuff. One day they were riding around the family car, and they took a turn, and the cancer oozed right out of her right ear, basically. It just it had dissolved.
Really?
And it just...
What's the name of it?
Dripped out her ear. It's called 714X. And it's the website for it is CERBE.com. It's incredible stuff. It was created by a biologist. And this guy was so
smart. Really?
When he was a kid, he had a motorcycle that ran on wood, burning wood. So, very smart guy. And
wow.
Just did a lot of research.
Wow.
And, he's cured a lot of people. And it's a preventive, too. I've taken it myself. I took it 3 times, and not only did I lose about 20 to 30 pounds each time I took it, because I couldn't stop exercising. It's almost like a natural steroid.
Really?
But it also boosts your immune system. So any degenerative disease is going to have a hard time setting in if you've taken this stuff, because it's giving your immune system every bit of ammo to fight anything off, basically. Unbelievable stuff. And
wow.
That acts quickly on your lymph.
I wrote it down. I own juice bars around Minnesota.
Oh, cool.
Inside LA Fitnesses. And I sell quite a bit of products, and I definitely would love to pass this on.
Yeah,
so,
they're working.
What happened was I got tired of all the medications. I mean, these doctors kept giving me more and more medications. Next thing I look at the bottles, I'm reading about this stuff, and it's like, oh, don't take this with heart medication. Don't take this with blood pressure. I'm taking everything you're not supposed to take with everything. And one day just threw it all away.
And, you know.
That's what they call practicing medicine, right?
Right, yeah. The side effects end up putting you at arm's length of the hospital for the rest of your life if you go through the rigorous stuff at a certain age, you know. So it's just definitely.
Well, I blew up all with 300 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just fat, lethargic, couldn't move, and then, I was always sick. So I decided, I looked in the mirror and did not like what I saw, and, you know, I mean, my ex-fiance could get her, wrap her hands around my arms. That's how thin and atrophied my arms were. And my gut was just huge. I was just so fat, you know. And I'd sleep 23 hours a day and never eat. And, and I just threw it all away one day and decided I'm going to get back into the gym and go holistic. And that's what I did. And I made a little comeback in fighting at that point. And I was in a plane crash. So I had my leg almost tore off from the propeller.
Oh.
The stabilizer bar from the propeller came down into my gut and tore up my stomach and my intestines. So I was on the operating table for 14 hours. I'm putting me back together. So but finally I got myself strong again to, fight. You know, I didn't get to end my career the way I wanted to, and wouldn't lose a draw. I just wanted to fight again, just to, you know, be part of it. So for 5 years, almost 6 years, it was just constantly fighting some kind of a health battle or injury or something, you know. So,
but, you know, Brad, it must have seemed like when you got back in the cage, it was easy compared to the fights you'd been through with your health situation. That's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, you know, I tell you, I'm not going to start preaching the Bible and stuff like that, but, you know, I do believe that, you know, God gives the toughest battles to the strongest soldiers, and I think I was, you know, I did it for a reason, and I know I did, because I just, at that point, it was, like, really crazy, because I started thinking, how can I contribute to this sport, even if I can't fight, you know? And that's why I came up with those machines that I think you guys saw on my videos and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's on the Kickstarter website, on my pages and stuff. And I said, you know, wow, not only is it a great machine for fighters and just people in fitness in general, but to strengthen your core. Because if you ever saw my abdomen, I was stapled from sternum to about 2 inches past my navel, just stapled, and I had no muscle left. I had to have several meshes put in to hold my stomach together, and I'm thinking, how am I going to strengthen this back up? And it was all about resistance training and, you know, trying to punch with the resistance. And so I came up with these machines, and that's, you know, I said, now everybody loves me here in Minnesota. And it's just, and yeah, that's where this all came up. And then I, you know, after all those fights, everything like that, not to sound like a big fan either, but, you know, those are a lot easier to come back than a broken heart, I'll tell you that. I kind of lost my mind about 2 years ago. Ended up homeless. And only thing I had left basically was my machines. And I took those and just kept them and kept working them and building prototype after prototype. And I moved into Chris McCune's martial arts school here in Minnesota. And that's where I just trained full time to make my comeback fight. And I worked those machines. I would sell some on the side and just build my life back up, and that's what I did. Now I own, you know, these website with a, you know, the machines you'll see is a phenomenal machines. I own, you know, $5 million juice bars inside LA Fitnesses, and that was just 2 years ago. I was broke and homeless, so you know it's you know, so I talk about, you know, making comebacks. You know, just, I mean, these machines are what brought me back. It's like, you know, I saw these things and I saw some kind of inspiration. And because of the sports that I love this sport. I've trained a lot of guys. I've trained with so many guys all around the world. I mean, I go back to thinking of Pat Militich's school. And our training room was Matt Hughes, Jens Pulver, Jeremy Horn, Tim Silva, Rich Franklin, Mark Coleman, Sean Shirk, Dave Manet, Pat Militich. I mean, you think about that training room, and it's like going, and good luck trying to get a takedown, you know. But I mean, these are the things that back in the day, you know.
Right.
But that's, you know, now it's like, okay, you're getting older. What do you do when you still want to fight or compete or train just a little bit? And you know, training guys in today's sport, it's tough because everybody wants to be an MMA fighter. Everybody's like, oh, I want to fight in the UFC, and like it's some great prestigious thing. Well, it is, but nobody realizes the sacrifices you got to make. I mean, you got all these guys today that are pro fighters. They go to work all day and, you know, work construction or work whatever. I mean, hell, they work at Blockbuster or McDonald's, and at night they go train for 2 hours, and they end up with 2 wins and turn pro. Well, I'm sorry, back in the days, I mean, we slept in the gym and we trained full time. That was our job. Today, it's a part time thing. It's a hobby, and they call them pros. And it's kind of sad because, you know, you see a lot of great fighters at the top, and then there's such a gray area between the bottom and the top. You know,
I agree.
And that's why the Brazilians and the other people are coming from all these other countries, because that's all they do is train. I mean, they work for peanuts 2 hours a day just to pay for their meals and train 8 hours a day. That's why we're getting all these other champions from all over the world. And the Americans, we're not getting sponsored. You know, there's no sponsorship here. I don't know what people are thinking. You know, they need to, you know, understand that the people that started this sport off and built it back then, man, they were the broke SOBs that lived in the gym. You know, and
never about money for those guys. It was about honor.
What's that?
It was never about money for those guys.
It was about honor.
Honor and building the sport and making a name for themselves.
Right. Well, if you think about it, I mean, I remember people thought we were crazy. I mean, I remember going to court one time, having a judge call me a human cockfighter. It's like going, what the heck? You got looked at so differently than we do today. Now they're like, oh, you know, he's a UFC fighter, you know? You know, I mean, you know, he is now, but, you know, back in the day, we were human cockfighters, right? I mean,
yeah, I remember being, you know,
it's crazy.
Just prior to high school, all my friends followed wrestling, And it was when Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock left wrestling to go to NXT that I first even learned it existed. And then I didn't really start following it until around 2006. So I'm still finding out stuff.
Well, those are the guys,
later.
Oh, you know, and, you know, it's so different now and so mainstream. But, again, it's a bunch of guys that are, you watch the Ultimate Fighter show and this, that, and the other. And, you know, really, it's not the talent hasn't gotten any better. There's just more guys doing it. And it's really, I mean, they're just more well-rounded. But they're not better athletes than they were back then. You know, one second, I got Glenn here, guys. And, I mean, I commend the guys that do have the nuts to get into the cage. But all in all, I mean, if it wasn't for, I'm thinking, Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture and these guys that, I mean, yeah, they were fortunate to get sponsors and make some money and this, that, and the other, but I don't know. You know, it's a long road between the guys that are in it today and those guys, you know. There's the icons today are really, you know, it's just different. I really can't pinpoint it. It's just different, you know. And, you know, it's a shame that, you know, I'm not going to say they should have a senior citizen, but those, you know, the older guy division or something, but, God, they still have such a following. I mean,
right.
I think of how many fights Tito Ortiz has had in the cage, you know? And here's a guy who, you know, just people love and follow, but why don't they just, you know, okay. But, you know, I mean, Randy and Tito and Chuck, I mean, I know they'd probably still fight if the UFC just said, okay, we're not going to bring out some big bruiser to beat the crap out of you. Let's make it some kind of even fight where, I mean, everybody makes money, you know? I mean, who wouldn't want to fight Chuck Liddell?
It's funny you mentioned,
you know,
that was one of my big criticisms at the time was that they seemed to be feeding Chuck to the wolves at the end. I don't know whether it was because he didn't want an easy fight or it was just, they didn't want to give him one, but, you know, he needed it. When he was in his little losing streak at the end there, he needed a pushover fight to get him his confidence back, and they didn't realize that, and they didn't pick up on that, and they put him in the position where they kind of forced him to retire after that. So I don't like the way he went out either.
Exactly.
I'm sure he has a lot of regrets about it, but, you know, it was a point.
No, you know.
A lot of people were thinking more about his safety than anything else, and maybe it was a good time for him to leave the sport, but you'd always like to go out on a
better note. You know, Brad, I have to mention, though, like you said, it was just different in those days, that there was just a rawness, and it's just, I don't think I've ever been as excited about a sporting event as I was back in those early days, you know, before or since. And, I mean, I'm still a fanatical fan now. I don't miss anything now. But back then, I just couldn't wait for the events. Things were just so raw, so different. And there wasn't the commercialism
right
back then. You know, like, you didn't like it in the fight that we, you know, with Steve that we were watching with you earlier. They didn't have all the sponsorship signs on the floor. I mean, it was just very different.
It was. You had UFC and, you know, what, eight steel cage walls, you know? I mean, that was it. There wasn't really anything on there, not even Giants or whatever the heck they were pushing for a while before that stuff went to crap, you know? I mean, but, yeah, it's it's different now. It's such a money. I mean, Holly Davidson is on the cage. You know,
in one sense, I mean, I know that things have evolved, and in one sense, I'm happy for the new guys. Maybe that they'll have a chance to make a little more money at it, and make a good living at it. But the point is, never forget the pioneers of the sport. Never forget that back when you were fighting, in, I believe in 99, it wasn't even on cable back then. You remember in 97, it was taken off Time Warner and all the big cable companies. And so it was just on satellite.
Well, that's true.
And,
yeah.
Boy, those were the dark FEG ages.
That, that SEG pissed off everybody and wouldn't pay the boxing commission or athletic commission. And
yeah,
so they had them basically blackballed.
It was tough.
Dana White and the Fertittas came in. Yeah. Oh, no, these guys have done a great job bringing it mainstream. But, okay, yeah, it's kind of like a multi-level marketing scheme, really. Because the only ones making the money are the guys at the top. And again, I'm not calling it that. I'm just comparing it here. And again, I love the UFC and what they've done with it. Don't get me wrong. It's just that, you know, it's like, well, okay, how much money do you guys really need to make before we can get, you know, much better competition? You know, I mean, there are so few guys out there that can really make a career at this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, think how many guys can really make a career at this? At a six-figure income, training full-time, and really make a go at this. And then for how long?
Right.
You know? You got maybe a five-year shelf life max as a UFC fighter.
Yeah,
gets tough. It's harder to make it to the UFC than any NFL team.
Oh, for sure. Well, all we can do is compare where things were, you know, back in the 90s.
Now, to mention that, it brings up a conversation that we had recently with a guy named Jimmy Quinlan, you probably heard of. He was on one of the Ultimate Fighter shows recently. Guy from Massachusetts. He was the only New England guy on that whole series, I think. We just had him on the show the other night, and he's trying to stick up for Dana White and, you know, how great he is. Of course, he's not in the UFC anymore. He's trying to get back in, so probably have to say that stuff in his own mind. But the point is, he's trying to explain how great a guy Dana White is, and I haven't mentioned this on the show earlier than this, but I was thinking about it the other night. He says, well, you know, Dana White's such a nice guy. I saw him give a $10,000 tip to a waitress. And at the time, I didn't say anything about it, but a couple days later, I'm thinking to myself, okay, so Dana White thinks it's not okay to pay a guy.
A waitress is more than an undercard fighter.
A three-round fight, as much as he pays his waitress for bringing him food, he thinks the waitress is worth more than the fighter. How does that work out in his brain to be logical?
Well, exactly. I mean, they still pay on undercards. They still pay 3-3. You know.
For a guy to make $6,000 or $8,000.
I mean, look at Weidman got in. Weidman's the champion now. What did he get paid in his last fight?
Oh,
$45,000.
$40,000, I think. Oh,
$40,000 was it? $40,000, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, still got more to lose.
Exactly. And,
you know,
the way it's set up to me doesn't make any sense. And what's worse is that anytime anybody brings it up to Dana White, and I understand why a lot of people like him, don't get me wrong. I think it is kind of cool that he tells it like it is. He throws a little F bomb out there every now and then.
Yeah.
And it's kind of edgy. It attracts attention. But at the same time, he's insulting guys with way more education than he has. Guys like John Cholish, who could, you know, go out and make a career out of any day of the week, just leave and do his own thing and be fine. And he decides to leave the sport, not just because he's not paid enough, but because they make him go to Brazil and bring all his people to Brazil on his own dime, and they still only pay him $8,000 for a fight. You know, granted, I think he lost the fight, but then Dana White turns around and calls him an idiot for complaining. And everybody that raises the issue is an idiot all of a sudden. Instead of Dana White going out there and explaining, all right, this is the exact reason why we can't pay these guys, he just goes, hey, if you're not good and you're not putting butts in the seats and doing great, and you don't deserve it. You know, and people don't put the connection together that this is a guy that never had a fight in his life. And for him to say
that's where I was just going to head to also.
It's ridiculous. And I wish more people would realize that and get over the fact that he's kind of a hipster with his language thing, you know? But I'm glad to hear old school guys bring that point up, because it needs to be really cemented in the media that
it'll never happen with Dana White. And again, I'm not knocking him. He's a businessman, and it'll never happen with the way it's set up right now. Any of the fighters, there's not going to be any changes made. Greed is greed. You can't change it.
Yeah.
It's the root of all evil. And money is the root of all evil. And right now, people don't change. Okay, it's just not going to happen. Where he's going to all of a sudden grow up conscious, go, we should take care of these guys. Really, really support them. Let's get an insurance program in place here. Let's make sure that there's a 401k. All these things, and let's start, let's start training them, paying them to train, and, could you imagine if all of a sudden you really found some really, really talented fighters and say, I'm not talking about the show, this and that, and everybody, because that show is nothing but a moneymaker for them, and nobody gets paid, a chance to make $100,000 a year, okay, wow,
And Jimmy Quinlan, made the statement that he'd almost rather fight three times in one night than go through that show. And I've actually written an article about
this,
because people don't realize how inherently dangerous that is to not only have to cut weight 6 weeks in a row, especially when they did the live edition, you're also having to, fight. Well, some of these guys had to have fights, four fights in a row, 4 weeks in a row during this thing. And the weight cutting alone, so damaging to some of these guys. To have to do that in such a short period of time and to go through that situation, it is almost worse than fighting three times in one night, because you only have to cut weight once when you do that.
This is where, in the old school days, you had to. But, it was very hard to finish. You could start it, but you could never finish it. But, I remember my very first tournament I won it, though, the hook and shoot. My first fight was 57 minutes long against Travis Fulton, no rounds, bare knuckles. And then I had two fights after that, But you'll never see that again. It's just because guys can't finish. And the reason why they can't finish, because they're part-timers. They don't train full-time. You take an Olympic wrestler against a part-timer, oh, my God, Olympic wrestler? Yeah, they're used to wrestling 6-7 times a day. Are you kidding me? Yeah, no problem. They'll do it. Olympic wrestling is still the toughest condition sport there is. What cracks me up more than anything else is boxing, the way they just paid Mayweather for that fight. Oh, my God.
He's a lucky one, though. Not all boxers get paid that much. He's in a category of his own. Still pound for pound fight.
But now you got
you've got guys in boxing making, on average, way more than MMA fighters in most of the big shows, anyway. Anything
Brad,
that's televised.
I have to shift gears a second here. I noticed from your Wikipedia page that you have a connection to the Cleveland area. Did you ever train at a gym in Independence, Strong Style? You've trained there?
I do know those guys, yeah. Dan Bobish is there, and Mark Marinelli, and I know those guys.
Forrest Pets, Jeff Cox. Well, I started training there back in 2002. I'm from Akron, so I'm from the area here, and so I was there till about 2006. And things have really evolved. I don't know if you've been back lately, but if you get back into town again, the facilities move, because if you were training there in the old Tracy's Karate place, remember how small that was?
I know it's evolved. I've seen the website, and I got guys that train there, and it's beautiful.
So things have really, really evolved, and we've got Stipe Miocic. Hopefully he's been making some noise. He got there just his last fight, beat Roy Nelson, and he was scheduled to fight Travis Brown, but then that
switched around. I guess Travis is going to be fighting Josh Burnett, so Stipe's kind of in limbo. But, yeah, there's a lot of good prospects coming up, and things have evolved so much since the old days. And you, now, you were there back in the 90s, I assume.
Yeah.
You did some training back then. Yeah, I didn't get there until 2002. But,
no, I was just there a few years ago.
Yeah.
At
Marinelli's
Strong Suit.
Yeah. So he's really evolved a lot, too, you know. And we'll see how it goes. But just was wondering if you had that connection there and bring back some memories of some of the old local fights we had in the Cleveland area back in those days, too. And now we've got the NAAFS.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a growing league, too, so...
Yeah, I remember Dan Bobish, he cornered Dan Sever when I fought in Cleveland, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had Dan on the show, too. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's an old friend, too, yeah. Good guy. Good guy.
And,
but have you guys seen the Kickstarter video I have out right now?
Yeah, you must be reading my mind, because I've been trying to wait for this conversation to get to that. And I was just about to bring it up. Because,
okay.
We have a lot in common, believe it or not, because number one, I've had my own near-death experiences. I fell off a roof once. I went into respiratory arrest once. When I fell off the roof, I broke 3 backbones, 2 ribs, punctured a lung, and lacerated my liver and almost died. And I was in the hospital for about a week.
Oh, my God, dude.
And it was after that I came back and I won the bronze medals in the 98 Boxing Nationals for college. So I was able to... Before that, I was wrestling.
Wow.
So believe it or not, I might have been in MMA if that didn't happen. But I went back to my love of boxing instead. But I also... Quincy High School in Massachusetts. And then when I went to Norwich University up here in Vermont... I was on the wrestling team, but I never competed or anything. I just went through the practices until I fell off the roof there on the off time.
Wow.
But I also created my own striking bag, and it's kind of a mix between a heavy bag and a speed bag because the body of it is made by a buoy, you know, like one of those big ocean buoys with a handle on the top. And then I tied that on with bungee cords to a speed bag for the head. And then I put that on ropes like a timing bag. And it adds just enough weight to it to make it kind of like halfway as heavy as a heavy bag, but it gives you the reaction like a human sort of, where it's coming right back at you.
Really?
And it's heavy. It works out pretty good. So I'm interested to find out what your plan is here and how you're going to distribute this and get it out there and manufacture it. And number one, how did you come up with the idea?
It's funny. I had a house out in the country, a nice big house and training facility. I even had a runway in my driveway. And I was waiting for my training partner to show up, who I've been training with for about 5 years now. And he's still fighting a heavyweight local here. Matt Larson, and he called and said he couldn't make it. And so I'm sitting there, you know, I want to hit some focus mitts and no one's around. So I'm trying to figure out a way that I can do some punching. So I cut some branches off a pine tree and set these focus mitts on them and try to tape them on, and they go flying off. Course, you know, and it was just ridiculous, and I'm and just getting ticked that I really wanted to, with my boxing, I wanted to box, you know, I mean, I'm trying to fight again, and I want to box, you know, I mean, I started walking to my house, and my daughter was home from Cleveland from college, and she's making dinner, and she goes, you want me to make you something, and as I'm walking out the front door, I said, no, I'm good, I'm going to go back and train, as I whip the screen door open, and I turned back to look at it, the screen door hits me in the head. And it just hit me like, going, oh, my God. You know, the door came back. If I put a pad, I started cutting wood. I started drilling holes. I made hinges. And this next thing you know, I came up with the heavy hitter. And so I put door shocks on them, and we got this thing patented now, and everything's really, you know, going good with it. And
And I start developing it with a little bit lighter and using aluminum and some really nice padding with the memory foam so you don't hurt yourself, and some heavier duty shocks so that makes them adjustable. So that was the first one. Then I made a bunch of them, and I had them all different angles all over the gym. And I had them in my training facility and McCune's training facility, and people just loved them, all different angles, even for knee. And so I was like going, I was bringing a bunch of women in there for a boot camp for money on the side to keep on developing these things, right? So I'm going to blend here, guys. So they said it was just too hard for them to find and this, that, and the other. So one guy says to me, goes, why don't you bring in a speed bag for the women, you know? I'm like, I don't like those speed bags. They're too loud, you know, and yada, yada, yada. So all of a sudden I go, now what if I can make a speed bag mounted to the wall, you know? So I started thinking, oh, my God, this would be even easier and better to do. So I made one, a prototype, within like 3 hours, welded it up with a ball joint and bungee cord. I got you.
You sure?
Yeah, I got you. Thank you. And so I welded this thing up, and oh, my God, it was amazing. You can hit this thing, jab cross, uppercut, hook. I mean, you can do 8-10 punch combinations in like 4 seconds. I mean, it just goes right back to center. And if you watch the video, you'll see what I'm talking about. This thing, the new ones are just unbreakable. I've had so many big guys like Brett Rogers and Jeremy Hamilton, all these guys hitting these things, and they just love them, you know. And so they're like, oh, hey, you got to think of something for like knees and kicks, because, you know, these wall-mounted machines are nice, because, and not only that are they nice, but they're quiet. You can put them in your apartment, and the neighbors can't hear you. So you got this memory foam that absorbs all the pressure with ballistic material that doesn't tear. So they're really nice to hit, and they're soft, and even with, like, bare knuckles, you do not hurt yourself, no matter what angle you're hitting on the quick hitter. So they're really nice. But ladies just love them. And then they want to do some, you know, kicks and knees. So then I came up with a combo hitter then. And they go, oh, can you make these adjustments? So is this talking to fighters and the people that I train, and, all, you know, a lot of professional players here in Minnesota. I mean, you know, there's a lot of them. And so they're giving me ideas. And so I would just go to the drawing board and, you know, just start making prototype after prototype. And I go, okay, try to break it. Okay, try to break it. Okay, and then they're, maybe this, if you had the pad going like this angle, if you had a little softer here. And a little, so now I got them all perfected. You got 3 different machines. The heavy hitter, which is strictly for if you want to build power, stamina, and technique, you know, without holding focusness. That's awesome. If you're looking for conditioning and speed, the quick hitter, because it comes right back to center. So you can hit that thing so many times and burn up, you know, so many calories also, because you're swinging to your tire, which is, you know, for most people not very long. But and then the combo hitter, which is for knees and kicks. And then on the rail system, which moves them up and down, you can adjust them on the wall. You can slide them up and down for your own height. What's also nice about the rail system now is it's a picture frame. You actually put a picture in it, and a shelf sits on it. And when you're not using it, you just take the stuff off the shelf, slide the shelf up, and put your machine right on the wall. So you can take them up and down, no problem. They weigh like 14 pounds. Cool. So, you know, they're very quiet, easy to mount. They mount right to the wall. So
what? Question when I saw it was how do you actually mount it to the wall? Does it take any kind of big screws? I know you said it's easier than a rack system, but how so? That's the one thing I think you got to add to the proposal is how exactly do you mount it to the wall?
Just screw them right into the studs.
That's it.
Just get a stud binder as you're going to, like, even hang a picture, you know, and just there's 16 inches on square. So you find one stud, go straight down the line, then you line up for the other one. And that's it.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome. And for under $200, I mean, it's a great workout. you know. So now that I got all the stuff lined up, and I go ahead. Sorry.
That's the sale price for all three different units to $200 each. That's your goal.
And that's why I'm trying to raise the money on Kickstarter. It's a publicly funded program that helps people start businesses, you know. And I watch this thing. I'm watching all these things that are on here. It's like there's a guy on there that just made these toy wooden cars. You know, he needed like $15,000 to produce these cars. He raised $250,000. I'm like, oh, holy cow. Another group of guys, they're making a pair of shorts.
Right.
Raised $300,000 to make a pair of shorts. I mean, are you kidding me? Well, here's something that I think would not only great for the fighters, but again, I want to contribute to this sport much more than just about this. And anybody here in Minnesota knows I'd give you the shirt off my back. And, you know, so I'd like to produce something that actually generates money to sponsor some fighters. You know, it's hard to just sit there and go, you know, okay, here's some money and da-da-da, and, you know, fighters, you know, who knows what they do with it anymore. But, you know, some legitimate fighters that need some help in the sport, you know, whether it's, you know, hey, I can't pay my rent every month, it'd be nice if I didn't have to take this bartending job, if I just worked my full-time job and quit this bartending job, I could, you know, really make a go at this fighting kind of thing. And I'm talking about some real talent, you know. I'm not just talking about here in Minnesota, but I'm talking about everywhere. There's fighters everywhere that could use a little, you know, your hand up, you know. So what I want to do with this also is I want to get on the road. I want to go to these sporting events and shows, so expos, and I want to develop distributors that also in the area do the same thing I want to do, help fighters, you know, buy, you know, if we sell these things, and a portion of these will go towards the fighters. Whoops. We've been losing time?
Yeah, that's our blog.
Hello?
Radio lady. She tells us when the show is about.
Oh, okay.
But we figured out the loophole that as long as Tom stays on the line, we can go to overtime. So keep going for a few more minutes.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things I want to do with this, and I put a lot into this. I have, you know, well over 150,000 in just the prototypes alone developing this thing and the patents. What we want to do is, you know, take it to a next step and get it out there for the fighters and the coaches and the fitness people, and take it to another level. The Kickstarter program can help me get there. You know, you think $75,000 isn't that much to really get there, because I really want to take this on the road myself and go to expos and promote it and get distributors all over the country, all over the world, because I already got some people interested in South Africa on this that wants to distribute in South Africa to promote fighters. So I think the concept's going to work. Actually, I know it'll work. And more importantly, I know these machines are going to help fighters and fitness people alone just, you know, become stronger and better punchers. And it's actually great to be in shape anyway. So you burn more calories than you do anything else because you can punch more than a heavy bag. So.
Right. Well,
so Kickstarter is the way to find out how to support it. Or you can go to my Facebook page, which is Brad Kohler. Go ahead.
I'm guessing that you haven't checked your Facebook page in the last few hours, right?
No, I haven't.
Well, I left you a message there, and I gave you the email address for Mike Tyson's publicist. And I know that he's trying to do a lot of different things with the sport, trying to bring a lot of guys up. And I don't know if you're looking for an angel investor, as they call it, but he might be the perfect guy to introduce this to. Because I don't know if he's got 75 grand towards it, but he might buy some for his guys because he's involved in that.
Well,
he's taking it seriously. So
I might donate some for him. I got plenty of prototypes sitting around.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But
we will definitely.
Yeah, no, thank you. Any help I can take. And even if people can't donate, you know, stuff like that, maybe a connection. Send me a connection to somebody who might be interested in helping me taking this to another level, you know?
All right. Well, you know John Bryant, as I know him, and I'm sure he probably told you kind of some of the background I'm involved in, how we met and all that. And so I actually know a lot of people who made some big investments into Zions, and it failed. And I just actually had a big hearing today out in Las Vegas. It didn't go my way, but it was just a couple small victories in the loss because it's going to make an easy appeal for me. But, you know, it's basically been a huge mess. It'll take forever for me to tell the story. But the bottom line is, you know, there's a lot of people out there that follow my website and that I communicate with that are in this big money circle that would be interested in, or that might be interested in trying to help you out. And I believe in it because I've been there myself, as I told you, but, you know, I'm not as nearly as far as you are as far as manufacturing anything. I just got one prototype of my own. So I really want to see you be successful so I can introduce my product to you and maybe see you sell that at some point because I know I can't do it myself. I don't have the first clue about how to do that kind of stuff, but... you know, I'm pulling for you big time. I really enjoyed talking to you tonight. I'm sure Tom did too. It's not often we get somebody that comes on and you don't even have to ask a question half the time. So I enjoy that.
Well, Brad, you have the fighter. Brad, you have the fighter's mentality, buddy. And I know you're going to keep punching. If nothing else, you know, you get knocked down, you keep coming back, and that's that fighter's mindset.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a rare breed, and I tell you what, it's a great sport. There's a lot of great individuals in here, and then there's a lot of the guys up there in the top, like the that act like pro wrestlers, shouldn't be, Dana White's a good guy and all, but he's kind of like the Eric Bischoff of pro wrestling, you know. I mean, a camera guy that found a money guy, you know. And but he did a great thing with the sport. And, you know, it's not a knocking. It's just here's a guy who went out there and took a chance, found the right guy, and did take it to another level. This is kind of like what I want to do with the machines. I want to take this, and I need to find that right guy to help me take this to another level. And, again, this is for the fighters. I actually want to contribute back to the fighters and help them develop their skills a little bit more. So, you know, I've been there. I've been in the cage. I've helped promote. I've helped manage and train. And I know what it takes. And only difference is, like I said, I really want to give back to the fighters. So.
Awesome. Well, it's been great chatting with you. You know, I will definitely keep in touch. We'll keep plugging the Kickstarter campaign, and I'll keep looking.
Thank you so much for your time.
Connect you with.
You've been great, Brad.
Might be able to help you out.
Gosh, Brad, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
God, that's awesome. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Be in touch.
Have a good night, guys.
All right, Brad. Good luck, buddy.
Bye bye. Thanks. Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye. All right, Tom. I don't know how long we're going to be able to stay on here, but. $165 at all yet, believe it or not. The two guys that always discuss MMA, we saved it for last. Didn't even think of it earlier. So I guess let's just go over the main event and then we'll call it a night. If you're game, we'll see if.
Well, you know, watching the countdown, there are just some genius promoters here. Genius marketers. But, my God, I mean, how do you bet against John Jones?
No, you can't.
You know, I played this game. I've been playing this game in my mind here. And as far as, it just seems like Jones's toolbox is just so big. And it has such efficient big tools in it. I mean, assuming that the stand-up war is not going in this direction, and early on it might not. I mean, I don't seem really getting hurt too bad. I mean, anything can happen, of course. But assuming it's not, eventually he's going to get Gustafsson on his back, in my opinion. And when that happens, it's going to be crunch time. Because no one has seemed to be able to work
a good guard game with those elbows coming down on them. And I would be surprised to see it go the distance. That's
well,
my
the only way I see it. The only way I see it going in Gustafson's favor is if he gives old John Jones there a big foot stomp and degloves his toe again.
Yeah. I remember that from the old days. That was a tactic. But Gustafson should dust off some of the old videos and look back on that. You know, the Marco Huas. You remember? I don't know if that name rings a bell. Yeah, the old foot stomps. It's going to be tough.
Right down in Iowa, where the foot stomp was crucial, and the kid who won the fight actually was body slammed out of the cage. He hit the door of the cage, it flew open, he went right down the stairs, and that made it worse because the cage was elevated. Went right down the stairs and landed on his back on the concrete and came back in the cage and won the fight. And he used a lot of foot stomps, so I just thought I'd mention that. But anyway, co-main event here is Renan Barao. He's on an unbelievable fight streak. It's kind of like Fedor's fight streak before he got on the wrong side of Verdum there. But Barao is fighting Eddie Wineland, who's 28-1, 20 wins, 8 losses, 1 draw. I'm not sure how competitive that's going to be because Barao has pretty much wiped out the competition.
I would say Wineland definitely has a puncher's chance, but you know, whenever you use that phrase puncher's chance, very seldom does it come out that way. I just think, again, this is a case with Hennin just having a much more diversified toolbox. And no disrespect to Eddie, I'm sure he's working on everything. He's a worthy challenger, but I think this is just going to be a long night for him.
I just brought up his record. I thought he fought, I could have sworn he fought Uriah Faber. Oh, there it is. Uriah Faber, UFC 149.
Yeah, he did.
5-round unanimous decision. And he hasn't missed a beat. The next fight, Michael McDonald, a really tough guy, got him in an arm triangle choke in the fourth. So he's obviously championship material. He's been in the championship rounds. He's got a hell of a win streak. Unbeaten streak, I guess. Got a no contest in there, but hasn't lost since his very first fight, which is kind of odd. That was back in April 14th, 2005, so he's basically undefeated for the last 8 years. 8 years. That's pretty hard to do when you're fighting that much. 30 wins, 1 loss, 1 no contest. That's a pretty tough record to compete with. And he hasn't really fought any pushovers either lately. So I think that's kind of an odds-on favorite to pick Barao there. But here's an interesting one. Brendan Schaub versus Matt Mitrione. And Schaub's 9-3. Mitrione is 6-2. I think both of these guys are coming off... I think victories, but not very impressive victories, if I remember correctly. I don't know. Matt Mitrione's one I'm not sure of. I know Brad Schaub, I remember specifically he had I think he was bleeding all over the place when he won his last fight.
I think Matt's had a few, he's had a couple of losses. I'm not sure if he's had a win that he's coming off of. But that was interesting. I don't know if you caught the countdown. If you caught the UFC countdown, you know, UFC 165 for this, and apparently there's a lot of trash talk going on between those two. Awful lot of trash talk going on. So apparently,
well,
I guess
actually,
they had some kind of bonding.
He knocked the guy out in 19 seconds. Philip Fries back on. April 6th of this year, but he hasn't fought in a while, so that might be a factor.
Yeah.
On UFC on Fuel TV 9. But both guys have really not demonstrated themselves to be championship material in the UFC. Both guys came from The Ultimate Fighter. I think they're on the same season, weren't they?
Right. That's the one that they had the former football players on. Because you remember that?
Yeah.
That almost all those guys,
Now, I don't think Schwab made it to the NFL, or at least Mitrione was saying that he didn't, whereas Mitrione did. He was on a few different NFL teams. I know you played for the Colts. Can't think of who else, but I don't think Schwab quite made it, if I'm remembering right. But, yeah, most of those guys, I think all of those guys, I think that was part of the deal. You had to have a football background to be on the show.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. But both guys have done all right in the UFC. They've had some exciting wins here and there. But, you know, even though they've got five losses between them, they still got a long way to go if they want to get anywhere near championship material.
But in the meantime, I'm going to go back to my old famous cliche about styles make fights, and this has the potential to be a fight of the night, one way or the other, because Schwab doesn't have the best chin, but, he comes to fight. So who do you like in this one?
I definitely like Mitrione because when I've seen him knock people out, he knocks people out with one punch. You know, he doesn't... The ref jumps in right away usually because he has some power. Schaub has more technique than power. And, you know, for a guy coming off a 19-second knockout, I'm going with that guy because Schaub actually had two losses before his last win. And Mitrione, I think, only had one in recent memory. So I'm going to go with Mitrione. But if it goes to decision, I think I'd favor Schaub because... I think that may be the one thing that Mitrione doesn't have going for him. So he's shown some lack of conditioning in some of his last few fights that's caught up to him, that at least fights that have gone more than a couple of rounds or one round. So that. But I definitely favor Mitrione either way it goes, if it's rounds. But anyway... Another fight, big one here. A lot of fight experience between these two guys. Pat Healy, 29-16, fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's under 50-0. And for a guy as young as he is, that's insane. And we have Constance Philippou, 12-2, versus Francis Carmont, who's 21-7.